Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have ideas to help our economy grow. Joining us down the line today, we've James Broom. He's the senior economist, or a senior economist, at May UK. Now, the Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of different companies in different sectors across the country, and some occasionally contribute to this podcast. We're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. It also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer Vance Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and I'm joined with my co-presenter today, Caroline Walker. James is down the line. Hello, James.
Hello there.
Before we get into the meat and drink of your contribution, James, just Caroline, at Recognition in general, we got about 60-plus clients, and there's lots of different things going on. I know your desk talks to people who are, they tend to be clients that serve the general public.
Very much more B2C than B2B, yes, but right across lots of sectors. So it's been a fascinating this week. Clients in several of the sectors that I deal with, health and fitness, automotive, care. Do you know what they're doing? Solar panels.
Yes.
That is such a buzz this week for press releases and work that I've been doing. They're bringing solar panels in because, firstly, cost, obviously. There's no energy price cap for businesses, and it's a major cost for some. I mean, just think of the health and fitness sector. Just think of all those swimming pools, jacuzzis that they're, you know, heating. But also, of course, it helps with the sustainability credentials, which is, you know, vitally important for everybody ahead of 2050 and net zero.
And they have large roofs, don't they? I mean, if you think about the buildings,
warehouses, car dealerships, health clubs.
Yeah, and even a larger, newer built nursing home will be the size of sort of a Holiday Inn Express.
Absolutely.
Like
yeah, absolutely.
So,
I've been dealing with a lot of that this week.
It has been interesting, actually. We've also seen on the manufacturing and implementation side quite a few service businesses emerging now in that sector of providing installation of solar and installation of car charging. I see that's a business model that's picking up all over the place.
Well, EV charging particularly, how important is that? You know, we're embroiled in quite a lot of work about the ZEV mandate at the moment.
Yeah.
But how can you have, I mean, I've got an electric car, fully electric car.
And I'm hybrid.
I couldn't do it without a home charger because the charging network in our area is just not good enough.
And you charge overnight, don't you? You don't charge like when you get home and plug it in. You've got some kind of system where you time it?
No, I do it. Yeah, I mean, I can time it or I can do it overnight when the electricity is a little bit cheaper.
And you have a tariff specifically for that?
No, unfortunately, not yet. But I am working, hopefully, my energy supplier is actually working towards that. They have now brought it in, but I was quite an early adopter of electric cars,
yes,
as you know, and with the home charging point. So unfortunately, mine's not compatible yet, but because it's such a huge energy provider, I'm hoping it soon will be.
Yeah, I know. I notice in our staff, I mean, we've got about four electric cars.
Fully electric,
There is a little bit of gossip among them about which energy provider for the tariffs at night.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, all of this goes to, that's probably going to be one of the things we pick up on in general when we talk about Make UK. Now, I'm going to hold this up, ladies and gentlemen. This is if you're listening, I'll tell you, it's the Manufacturing Outlook Report Q3 from Make UK. Now, Make UK represent the manufacturers of Britain. And the interesting thing about the manufacturing sector of Britain is that it has defied the odds the last few years, and it's set productivity standards that could only be hoped for in the public sector and in the services sector, to be fair. So it has been thriving and setting the records. I don't know if you've noticed.
No, I have. And actually, reading the previous report to that, the regional one, the North East is flying.
Yeah, the North East of England.
You know, it's way ahead of everybody else. And the North West is actually not that far behind as well, particularly in average balances, outputs and orders. It's fantastic because there's a lot of people still work in the sector in the North East. Did you remember back in the day, you'll remember this, when you were at school?
Yes, in the 70s.
If you didn't go to university and you left school in Teesside particularly, you had two options, British Steel or ICI.
And I went to the British Steel one.
You went to the British Steel one.
I went through the apprentice centre and did all my checking and so on.
But there is still a lot of people in this region and in the Northwest region who rely on manufacturing for their livelihoods.
That's right. It's not all assembly work either. Right, now let's bring Jane Broome in. Jane, you've heard a bit of our chatter. What would you say is the headlines from this before we drill into it? The Manufacturing Outlook Report.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's I think the headline, or you know, amongst friends, the headline is we were perhaps a little wrong. We'd had very high expectations for this quarter that weren't quite met. But I think that the sector, as measured by the confidence metric, that actually the short-term output and orders that didn't quite hit our expectations this quarter, the sector doesn't seem too worried because confidence continues to grow and remains high. So what we've seen is a short-term blip, a downturn, not necessarily into negativity, really technically just so, but just a pause, a flattening. And we've seen that across employment as well. So what that typically means is the sector's having a moment of holding its breath, doesn't want to go too long on its wage bill, not quite sure what's around the corner, but it certainly isn't worried about a systemic change in the direction of travel. Because if that were to be the case, we would expect to see a trickle down in that confidence metric.
Okay, well, the confidence is good. And in the north of England, where we see that there is a breakdown in the report on page 13 of the report, there's still a smiley face next to the graphic in the northeast. There's a smiley face in Yorkshire, and there's a smiley face in the northwest.
It's unusual.
So it's all smiley. Yeah, well, I know. Some people in Yorkshire, they wouldn't get the door open, but there we are. But they seem to be happy as it gets. Steady as she goes.
Well, yeah, you're right to note that every, you know, every region and nation that makes up, you know, the UK there is reporting confidence value over 5, and so it's a diffusion index, which is just a silly word really for meaning above 5 is positivity and below 5 is negativity. It's been the case for a little while now. I think the most negative region in the last quarter was the Southwest, but that's still at a 5.9 or 6 roughly, so that's still, you know, in safe positive territory. You're right to mention the Northeast at 6.2, the Northeast at 7, Northwest, sorry, at 7.1, and Yorkshire and the Humber side at 7.1. So quite high figures. It's been this way consistently now for about a year and a half, and particularly when we look at our back confidence data, for the past year and a half, confidence has been slowly growing and markedly on aggregate well above that 5 line. So why is that? What does this mean? Well, we think a lot of it is, of course, the business environment, manufacturers' business environment over the past year has been relatively the most stable to any of the 4 years before it, preceding it. Because obviously we had the COVID and then we had the bounce back from COVID, which is disruptive in its own sense. It then brought along serious input inflation. We then straight on the back of that had the energy crisis, the geopolitical frictions that follow from that. So really, and probably people tell me off for saying this, but it has been very, very stable, relatively speaking, when we take a 5-year zoom out picture of the manufacturer's trading environment.
I would give this observation, see if you think there's anything in this. The future budget is worrying a lot of people in business. And there's no question, in my day-to-day work, I talk to people in business who are worried about the implications of what Rachel Reeve might do. And there's been a little bit of contagion of gloom from Keir Starmer's demeanour. However, most of the prospective tax changes are not immediately going to impact on manufacturing. The tax changes around capital gains on property, for example. The investment might be hit in the longer term, but corporation tax is already settled business, and the government is going to change corporation tax. So it might be on allowances, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of talk about that. It's mostly about tackling wealth and the trickle down for investment, not manufacturing costs.
It's something I think the sector is really looking at, the big picture industrial strategy that's been long touted, long promised, and certainly it was probably fair to say the leading point of Labour's campaign for the business vote was that introduction, the commitment to introduce an industrial strategy. We're likely to hear more this month, and I think a lot rides on this. And less so about what you've just mentioned, the individual components of the business environment, let's say corporation tax, privacy, investment policies. It'll be about the signal that is the government keen to work, commit to a plan, make the UK over the next 5-10 years, not in the next single year, the place to manufacture and drive that confidence that can then signal that inward investment. Of course, we've had 8 industrial strategies come and go in various degrees of seriousness in only the past 10 or 11 years, just over a decade. So the sector is already quite weary and quite jaded of the term, of the concept of industrial strategy, yet it clamors for one, particularly in the past 2 years, where we look across the look across to our American partners and competitors, and indeed we look across to many European nations, and we see perhaps with a degree of envy, you've got things like the Inflation Reduction Act in the US, you've got things like the European Union Net Zero Industries Act in the EU, which effectively all drive that domestic capacity. They've got levers and tools in it that, around tax, but fundamentally they're about bringing capacity home, nearshoring supply chains, and ultimately developing that manufacturing and industrial base for the future in those countries. We don't yet have something like that. And so the final thing I'll say on that is that we've seen them come and go, but so many times they've just been tantamount to a piece of paper.
And there are actually net zero threats as well. You mentioned steel, Caroline. There's stuff that's happening in Wales.
Yeah,
it's driven by net zero.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. But also we can widen it out, can't we, at the moment? Do you think businesses' confidence is actually going to be knocked by, well, what's happening literally now in the Middle East? You know, is that going to escalate? You know, you've got Suez, which is a major, major waterway. But on top of that as well, 7 o'clock tonight, the Fed is going to announce what they're trailing as a huge, potentially, could be an interest rate. Now, last time I checked, the dollar pound was over 130, 1.323, on the back of all the speculation. That may change even more when the actual announcement's made. Is that going to have an effect?
Yeah, it's actually very timely that you might see in that there's a pullout of the report which focuses on supply chains, which is very relevant because the sector will be worried about it in the interest of general global and financial stability, but more directly and close to home will be the impact or any potential impact on supply chains. Mm. That's something that really caught the sector off guard during the pandemic. But now, as we've seen, as the report shows that we published on Monday, supply chains are a lot more, or manufacturers take a lot greater focus on supply chains and the resilience thereof, which means that things like the current geopolitical tensions that have been flaring in one shape or another over the past year and a half, the sector has a keen eye on it and a keen eye not to get caught short like it did during the pandemic to the best of its ability.
And I think that's a very good point, though. Let's just drill down a little bit into that. More than half of the companies responding to your research said that they were now developing resilience strategies and tactics. And some of them were doing things like supplier diversification. They weren't just going to get a widget made in China. Maybe there'd be one made in India. They were also looking at the risk in contracts. So if there was a risk because of a supply chain problem and there was other parts that people wanted paying, then there might be a risk share, so that they paid a little bit, or like, when I get it, you get it kind of approach.
Yeah, that's right. And I think ultimately what was perhaps discovered, or most of the sector know this already, but it had its mettle tested, was in particularly complex supply chains. And I should start by saying that a lot of UK manufacturing sits in the middle of the value chain. So a lot of import, a lot of export, but effectively, if you can't get your supply, there might not necessarily be a timely alternative or an alternative at all.
Yeah.
And the same goes maybe for your supplier or customer. So there's a degree of implied cooperation that must happen. And you can't just necessarily throw your toys out of the pram in these kinds of relationships, because ultimately then the OEM's never going to get their widget or the combination of widgets to make that finished product. So we're seeing that pragmatism develop, as you mentioned in the statistics there, develop within the supply chain in terms of working with suppliers and customers on that risk sharing and minimizing disruption and generally working together as a vertical in order to deliver.
And Caroline, just to go back to the first part as well, the you talked about longer supply chains, Suez, the threat of disruption in Middle East wars and other conflicts. But the other thing you mentioned was the interest rate in America. We run, James, in the Northeast at Recognition with the Clive Owen LLP, the accountancy practice, and with NewsQuest, the media company. We run 2 shadow MPCs.
We do, yes. We get together business people from different sectors, either across the Northeast or Yorkshire, and they tell us a little bit about how their sector's doing. But the key to it is, what do they not what do they think the MPC will do. What, if they sat on the MPC, would they vote for? And apart from one who went for a hold, we had unanimous for a cut in UK interest rates. And what was interesting, a point that you and one of the members made, was that we shouldn't be following America or anybody for that matter. We should be leading the way in setting economic strategy and setting interest rates, in tackling inflation and all the different UK and global pressures.
Yes, we do these things, as I say, in Yorkshire and in the North East. There is a more of a bias towards manufacturing in the North East on the panel. But nevertheless, yeah, it was overwhelming that we should just get on with it. The inflation is stable. This was done on Monday. Inflation's stable. People didn't want to let America beat us to a lower interest rate and therefore a higher pound. And also, there could be pressure to put interest rates up or not reduce interest rates in a few months because of inflationary pressures in energy. So the logic the panel thought was, if we've got a window to reduce now, do it now.
And the most upbeat, the most upbeat member was the representative of the construction sector.
That's right, yes.
It was very upbeat about what was happening.
Well, James, what's your comment on that?
Of course, particularly that comment about the construction sector, because non-metallic minerals, which is our fancy classification word for effectively building stuff, that's glass, bricks, mortar, so on and so forth, that's seen some serious inflation, on that side. So no surprise that they want to see the cost of capital come down there. I think it's something, a real focus area of our research is that interaction between the base rate and the sort of propensity to invest, which might seem like an obvious thing to say. But what we've seen over the past 2 years is as part of the report, it's included there in this commentary on it, similar to what I'm about to say. Over the past 2 years, it's been a sort of positive holding pattern. Why is that? And what we've seen in the meantime, we've seen very significant pro-business policy come into force. And of course, I'm talking about things such as the full expensing regime coming on the back as well. We've had that quite infamous or famous super deduction scheme. But actually, it hasn't managed to move the needle much in moving those investment intentions, because ultimately, how the sector decides how and when to invest is governed by the prevailing headwinds of the economy and the relative cost of capital. Now, of course, at the same time, the base rate has been held at a very high level for a very long time. And so the sector has that pent-up investment intention, but thinking perhaps not now. Perhaps we'll wait till it comes down, which is, I know, just anecdotally and in data, that a lot of the sector feel this way. Now, of course, we just had in August that first base rate change, and that's by, two-thirds of a hair, as we always expected. But the point is, it's the signal, and I think the sector's now quite confident that it's the start of the fall on that base rate. It'll be managed and slow, and it might take 2 years, but now could be the time to start investing.
It is interesting, and James, the government's got to join this up, because and this is my personal view, but there is an element of they're pressing the accelerator with one foot and pressing the brake with the other, because all of that stuff about Green New Deals and all that stuff, very interesting. But then if you say to somebody who's got money invested, right, there's my guaranteed treasury bonds at 5.14%. And by the way, if you want to invest in the city and you make a profit, we're going to put your capital gains tax up. That's the wrong way to look at the stimulus and incentive from investors. So it's an accelerator, it's a brake.
There's I think some more egregious examples as well, which is why we think it's a joined up approach with industrial strategy is so important. Of course, it's more on the micro, more on the ground, but perhaps more pertinent to most SME manufacturers is, of course, the system around business rates and how you would invest in, let's say, putting solar panels on your roof, which I heard you talk about at the start of this show, or other such energy efficiency enhancing measures for your plant, and your business rates will go up as a result. So effectively acting as a punitive measure on making that country, UK PLC, journey towards net zero, taking a step towards it, you're punished by the rate system. So of course, we think that's really quite a piece of low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better word. Yeah. But it's a core example about how we have a goal, let's say net zero for the industry, net zero for the country by whatever time it's likely to move over time as well. But the policies within it aren't driving us towards it. So it's exactly as you suggest, accelerate on one hand, but in some other areas. And I honestly don't think it's through a lack of belief or a lack of intention. It's a lack of joined up approach between various comments, various concerns that can be brought together under that one driving force, as we've seen to varying levels of success, but success indeed in our partners and competitor nations as well.
James, it's been great talking to you. Caroline, thanks for being on the programme.
No, it's a pleasure. Good to talk to you, James.
And we are rotating now. There's people from Recognition coming on. The team seems to be getting into this podcast. It's getting quite a few viewers. You can follow it in video on LinkedIn or on YouTube. You can follow it online as an audio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Amazon. Now, if you want to be a guest on the podcast, do get in touch. The person that prepares it at Recognition PR is Harry Sinclair, and I'd like to thank him for producing today and thank James and Caroline as well. Also, thanks to our technical director, that's Robin Campbell. And now join us next time for the Northern Business Podcast. Don't miss an episode by like, rating and subscribing on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.